I can't tell you what a privilege and honor it is to be here today, passing on to you the meaning of the teachings of my teacher, Shunryu Suzuki Roshi. And by passing on the meaning of his teachings, passing on the meaning of the teachings of all the Buddhist ancestors, all the way back to Shakyamuni Buddha. A monk once asked the Chinese Zen master Yunmen, "What is the teaching of the whole lifetime of the Buddha?" And Yunmen answered, "An appropriate response." And I think we should just sit for a second, feeling that. What is that actually? What could that possibly be? Where is it in our bodies? How do we know? How do we know if our response is appropriate? Maybe it's totally off. And how will we know? In Buddhism, what's called the six perfections teach us to have an appropriate response. And the first of those six perfections is giving. The perfections are a way to teach us to situate ourselves in the world, to be fully ourselves, and in such a way, help others to be fully themselves. And we give permission to things also to be themselves. Suzuki Roshi says that in Buddhism, there's three kinds of giving. There's giving material things, there's giving gifts of fearlessness, and there's giving the Dharma. And so we all know about material things, but if we notice that we're being possessive, one of the first ways we can practice generosity is by practicing generosity toward our possessiveness. And sometimes we do feel stingy and we may want to hide that even from ourselves, but that's being ungenerous toward our feelings and actually blocking at that point momentarily the perfection of giving, if we acknowledge that, however, we open the door. So you can see that consciousness plays a big part in this. But gifts of fearlessness are interesting. Welcoming everything, I mean, even the fact that you're stingy, you may not be stingy, but if you are, welcoming that, acknowledging it and welcoming it in such a way that people, everyone can see that and they have permission to. That requires fearlessness. Here's a wonderful poem by, it's called Birdfoot's Grandpa. Birdfoot's Grandpa. And it's by a poet, I've never heard of him, Joseph Bruschak. Bruschak, and it about practicing fearlessness. So here's the poem. The old man must have stopped our car 24 times to climb out and gather into his hands the small toes blinded by our lights and leaping. Live drops of rain. The rain was falling, a mist about his white hair, and I kept saying, "You can't save them all. Accept it. Get back in. We've got places to go." But leathery hands full of wet brown life, knee deep in the summer roadside grass, he smiled and said, "They have places to go too." So I'm doing this. I'm doing this no matter what. He's saying basically, no matter what. That no matter what is completely fearless. That's what I'm talking about. No matter what. I'm doing whatever it is. No matter what. Regarding the Dharma, the third way that Suzuki Roshi says Buddhism teaches giving, regarding the Dharma, teachings are conveyed with gifts, often teachings are conveyed with gifts of a question. And many, many spiritual dialogues have started with a bodhisattva asking a question. But when bodhisattvas ask a question, they aren't looking to get something, like an answer. They're looking to help all beings. So they ask a question whose answer would be helpful to all beings. And I'm not saying that you may feel that you're bodhisattvas, but I'm not feeling that I'm a Zen teacher. I'm just a student like yourselves with a little bit more experience. And your questions anyway are gifts, and just your presence is a gift, and it allows this all to happen. But asking a question is a further gift. But it's interesting how so many teachings have started with a Dharma question. And then I'm reading a book right now by I'm rereading a book by Thich Nhat Hanh, which is the life story of the Buddha. And he was very almost partial to children. And one day, one afternoon, he asked them all to, he invited them over, and they were all just, you know, sitting outdoors in the forest under the trees and telling stories about their lives. And one little girl said, "Will you tell us about your life?" And so therein ensued the whole book about Buddha's life, which we now have. So it all started with this little girl's question. That's what I mean. So Roshi suggests that in each situation, we ask the question, what is being asked of me? What right now is the most precious thing I could give? So, what if our gifts aren't appreciated? Like, you slave away all afternoon making this wonderful meal for your family, and you hear, you know, "I hate this." And if you resist the feedback, you're actually over-identifying with being a giver. If you hear the feedback, you can feel that it helps you not to get stuck in that position. Suzuki Roshi says that giving, to give is non-attachment. That is, to not attach to anything is to give. To not attach to anything is to give. Another way that probably you're not thinking of as giving is giving interpersonal boundaries. So to think of boundary setting as giving, you give a boundary as opposed to you make a boundary. You give a boundary because to be respectful of others, we have to first respect ourselves. And when you think about it, giving a boundary gives the other person a way to respond appropriately to you. You're saying, this is how to respond appropriately in this situation, and you set the boundary. And then you both get to respond appropriately. People are funny about setting boundaries because they feel like it's saying no, and saying no is like being mean. But setting a boundary is actually not being mean. As I just pointed out, it helps the other person to feel inside themselves what a correct response might be. And that would be appropriate. We're going to shortly have a whole class on saying yes, by the way. A few classes up. Whereas there's always a chance to be generous, sometimes we'll miss that opportunity. If we catch ourselves missing the opportunity, we can be generous to ourselves for missing that opportunity. Darn it, I could have done such and such. And so then you didn't miss that opportunity. And then that reinstates our generosity. Generosity comes in the world of living beings by welcoming and being gracious to whatever arises and ceases. And this practice helps us understand that all arising and ceasing, really all arising and ceasing, are gifts. When we are generous, we become grounded in how things actually are. And from that place of groundedness, our appropriate response just naturally arises. It's like the groundedness reconnects us with Buddha nature. And from there, the appropriate response just comes out of you. But remember, when we engage in these transcendent practices, we're actually engaging in our idea of them. And as we practice them, we realize that they're more than that. They're more than our thoughts and our understanding. And then by training in this way, by practicing with our idea of something and then realizing that actually what this practice is more than our idea of something, we start to enter the sixth perfection, which is the perfection of wisdom. And then we see that that's our actual practice, and there is no giver, no receiver, or even gift. But that's the conventional understanding and ultimate understanding that I've talked about before. And ultimate understanding is really beyond our human mind. I wonder if there are any questions.
So we have a question. And the question is, for me, the hardest thing of all is to give myself compassion. Are there any tricks?
The best thing, it's not a trick, but the best thing is to feel into the place inside of you that's sobbing. And when you feel that, like a mother to a child, your compassion just naturally arises. So, feeling into yourself where that place of that needs the compassion the most. That's the trick. So not to look outside yourself. Not to look outside yourself. That's the answer.
Another question we have is, what are the six perfections?
The six perfections, and interesting, they're taught in this order. They start with giving, and then ethics, and then patience. That's my hard one. And then joyful effort, like joyful, and also so that poem is joyful effort. It's like no matter what effort. But it's joyful, you know. And then concentration, and then wisdom. Those are the six. So giving, ethical behavior, and that requires a lot of thought and consideration. Patience, joyful effort, concentration, wisdom. Those are the six.
Another comment that we have is, I never thought of asking questions as a gift. I rather think of them as a nuisance. But you're right, if they're thoughtful, they can be helpful to just more than me.
Yes, I'm thinking of how the Buddha always addressed, when he addressed children, he was really marvelous. I think there's a book with his previous lifetimes as he remembers them. And let me see if I can remember one of them. The Buddha was a palmeria tree, and there were tiny little fish and a crab and a heron in the story. And the heron was only after food for itself. And so it wanted the fish. But I think there were shrimp and little fish. And so it took, it said, you know, and there was a lake nearby. And it said, you know, here you are in this muddy little place. Why don't you let me carry you over to the lake that's very cool and plenty of water and plenty of food for you, and you'd be much happier there. So I'll carry you over, the heron said to the fish and the shrimp. And they said, well, how do we know you don't just want to eat us? And the heron said, well, how about I take one of you over and you could look over this lake, and then I'll bring you back and you can tell the others, and that's how you'll know. And so they agreed, and he took one by one over, but instead of dropping them in the lake, he put them on a branch of the palmeria tree and peeled off their skin and ate them. And the palmeria tree, who's the Buddha in the previous life, couldn't do anything about it. And he felt so helpless. All he could do was wave in the wind or grow leaves, but he had just had to watch. And then the heron proceeded one by one to take all the fish over one by one and do the same thing. And so there were all these bones piled up under the palmeria tree now. And the palmeria tree just had to bear it. He just had to bear it. And finally, we came to the crab. And the crab said, you know, I don't trust that you'll be able to hold me in your beak. I wanna be on top of you and hold around your neck. And the heron said, well, okay. And so the crab got on top of the heron and supported himself around the heron's neck. And when they got to the lake, he grabbed tighter and tighter and tighter and killed the heron, strangled the heron, and then was able to live in the lake. And the Buddha had to watch that too. And he made a vow to himself that in all future lifetimes, he would do nothing but help other beings, because it was so painful to watch beings being ruthlessly destroyed by those who were more powerful. I'm not sure that relates to the question, but it's on my mind, that story. And this is how he taught children. You know, all of his teaching of children are stories of animals, and they usually stem from a previous lifetime that he's remembering. One of them, he was a deer. It's amazing just to think of the Buddha, you know, as a palmeria tree, or a deer. But he always tells these charming little stories with powerful messages, and that's his teaching to children. Probably this doesn't relate to the question, and I'm sorry. But hopefully there'll be some answer in there.
Such an interesting story. We also have another comment. And the comment is, no matter how I think about it, I cannot bring myself to say no to anyone.
So what would happen if you thought of not saying no as selfish? That not saying no was really about, I need to be liked. and I can't bear not to be liked, so I have to say yes. That again, no is mean. But if you stop to think about who are you, if there's a thought in another person's head that you're mean, who are you then? Are you really mean? Does that mean you're a bad person? If another person thinks you're a bad person, you really need to know the answer to that before you proceed in your life. If you do that, if you sit with that question, who are you, when you say no, even, and who are you when someone thinks anything? You need to know before you continue with your life, really. You need to know the answer to that question. You're not the thought in someone else's mind. It's just a thought. That's my answer.
Another question that we have is, can you tell Buddha's story about deer that you mentioned?
Let me think for a second. It's escaping me right now. I'm sorry, it was so charming. How about if I tell it the next time? I promise I'll tell it the next time. I'll make a note right now. Thank you for asking. It's a great story. I promise I'll tell you the next time. It had that same powerful message.
Okay, perfect. Something to look forward to. So we have another question. How do you practice giving without attachment or without feeling or thinking? Now I am giving and now I'm really giving.
So the way Suzuki Roshi phrased it is, to give is non-attachment. That is, not to attach to anything is to give. So, and you're asking how do you do that? I bet you already know the answer, actually. And it's how we do anything. We connect with know-how. We just know how, and there's no, from there, we want the best for the other person. When we're coming from our Buddha nature, all we want is to help other people. We want the best for others. And so then when you've given that spirit, you're not thinking of yourself. And so you're thinking of the other person and what would be the best. And so the giving is all focused, and the weight of the giving is on, how can I be the most helpful? You know, what does it, again, it goes back to Suzuki Roshi's question, what is the most precious thing I can give right now? And that's not about, darn it, I wish I didn't have to give my whatever. It's, I'm so glad for the opportunity to be able to give whenever. That's how to give without attachment. I'm thinking of, there's a lot of Buddhist stories, a whole lot of, some Buddhist ascetic in a cave meditating, and a stranger comes in to rob him, and they just start collecting whatever they have, whatever they see, and then the monk who's meditating just says, it goes even further. They don't just say, "Oh, you forgot such and such." They'll run after the thief and say, "Oh, you didn't take this. Maybe this would be helpful to you." So that's non-attachment. Running after the thief and saying, "Oh, you passed over such and such. Why don't you take this too?" But not sarcastically. That's how. I hope the talk was helpful to you. That is my intention, and I'm happy to receive also comments of how maybe it wasn't helpful, or really anything you'd like to add. That's all.